Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Scales of Truth. I've really struggled with some of the information I've come up with lately because I've been researching in piecemeal many, many things and then trying to understand how to present that information. And by the time I record an episode, then I've delved a little bit more. This is in about the last week or 10 days. And so I think I'm just going to go kind of off the cuff on this and not give you all the citations. And then separately, maybe I'll put up the citations as I've pre-recorded about three or four attempts at different types of episodes. Hey, this is Tyson Hartley interrupting Tyson Hartley to tell you that after I recorded this, I decided I would go ahead and put an introduction to this saying that I had a bibliography, a audio bibliography or selected bibliography, so that you can go listen to that and know many of the sources that I went and looked at in order to get to these conclusions and make some of these statements of facts. So that is in the a previous episode that is a quick rant of truth. So please go check that out. Thanks. So let me just try to summarize where I've come and then how I got there. And it's going to get all the way, it's basically going to go from bad to worse. So if you keep listening, you'll keep finding out more and more of these connections. And at the end, how what seemed like a narrow potential issue is actually just a massive problem now. So let me tell that in the form and sequence of the story of, you know, what my motivation was to begin, and then we'll end up with where I went, because it's kind of a disturbing journey, or a very disturbing journey. So first, I was looking at the idea of graphene oxide. You know, there have been many an accusation that graphene oxide is in the vaccines. And when I hear someone saying spectroscopy shows it, well, spectroscopy is a very established and very exclusive science and instrumentation. So if I hear somebody say spectroscopy shows graphene oxide in the vaccine, I'm not just going to put that possibility down. Now, I may only bookmark it for later, but I'm not going to put it down because of that exclusive kind of access to the instrumentation and the precision with which it can find things potentially, and let alone when the accusation is that the vaccine is 99% graphene oxide. Now, I'm not going to put it down just because somebody says, no, it's not on the list, because that's not the accusation. The accusation is really, why is it there if it's not even on the ingredient list? So from there, I went into, okay, graphene oxide, what is it? And then what is the potential reasoning it would be on in the vaccines? How would they possibly rationalize it? Because if you look into science, you'll understand that it's a bunch of rationalizations to get things put into products. And unfortunately, that's just how it works. And once they rationalize a little bit, then they rationalize more, and then they rationalize more. See all my previous episodes on PCR testing and also on glyphosate and others. So looking to graphene oxide, the long story short is that it's a nanoscale nanoparticle. This is all based on journal articles. It's all based on journal articles. Was some of it kind of echoed in regular, more popular science? Sure. But you can go find the abstracts that say it's a nanoscale razor blade. It's a nano blade. And it creates damage. Now, they'll call it interaction, but all the way to the point of puncturing cells, they'll call that interaction and, quote, interacting with the nucleus itself of cells. So this nanoscale razor blade basically is used, and in fact, and can also destroy macrophages, which are a part of the immune system. So these nanoscale razor blades are associated with, yes, blood clotting, just like you'd expect a razor blade might hurt the integrity of the transport system of blood. And when the integrity of the transport system of the blood is damaged, then you get clots to stop the leakage. Now, there could also be some clotting around just, you know, the fact that there's a particle inside that the blood serum that it collects the blood around it. That's also a possibility. But the mere fact the razor blade is inside it is bad. So all of this is very established and very known. You have to kind of work through the keywords, but sometimes you don't. It's just a given that it's incredibly damaging because it's a nano blade. Okay, so then you find articles that say, well, can we use this nano blade as an adjuvant in vaccines? And you go, well, that can't be right. That would be really, really stupid. Why would you use A, nanoparticles, and then B, a nano blade nanoparticle as an ingredient in vaccines? And so then you find out, well, adjuvants, as you may know, are used to supposedly boost the immune system response, supposedly just to boost it a little. So you've got the main response, which is, okay, we're presenting you with a dead virus or some part of a virus or a live attenuated virus or some part, a subunit, they'll say, so that your body learns to catalog that. That's the classic biology 101, what vaccines do. But then you discover something along the lines of, hey, without the adjuvant, the reaction wouldn't be anywhere near as much. So that seems kind of suspicious. You bookmark that. And so you look into the idea of the graphene oxide as an adjuvant. You'll find out, yes, they're definitely talking about that. And as they talk about it, they run up against this idea of just how toxic it is. Another aspect of the graphene oxide is that though, and you'll run into this, let me go back really quickly. You'll run into this idea that it's very, very, very toxic and it's too bad, but it's not really ready to be put into an adjuvant yet. As late as articles, and maybe later, but the one I found in mid-2020, say June of 2020, graphene oxide, could it be used as an adjuvant? Maybe, but it's hyper-toxic, and also it happens to clot. It aggregates. It doesn't dissolve in the body's solutions. So what do we do about that? And they'll talk about, well, what we'll do is we'll adjust the surface properties. We'll nano-engineer it, if you will, and then maybe it won't clot, it won't aggregate. It will be, you know, it'll transport through the system better. And you later find out that that is a typical thing of nanoparticles, and we'll get to that. But you'll find out that that the graphene oxide, it's just not just that. Now, it is used in industry for any number of things, and that's bad enough. And we find out that the graphene oxide isn't just used in industry a little, it's used in industry a lot. Now, I forget whether it's computing industry, but any number of applications, even so much so that there are articles that talk about journal articles with abstracts, regular, you know, research journal articles, admitting in the introductory part of the abstract that it is becoming more and more prevalent as far as a general toxin, and names off the various industries that use it, and it talks about, because of how prevalent it is becoming, how it can be an environmental toxin in general, both to the environment generically and to biology and in humans and fish. And there are studies around the toxicity of this stuff to fish. And yet we still have them talking about putting it in adjuvants. And the reason they will is that they'll narrow this discussion to the idea that, well, if you just look at it as adjuvants, it's not very much of an exposure to individual humans or to humans in general. Yet in the same timeline, on different threads of the conversation, they'll be talking about how much more this stuff is in the environment generally, even to the point of, and this is going to be something to pay attention to, that we process graphene oxide in powder form, which they then say, well, you know what, that leaves open the possibility that it could float in the air and stay in the atmosphere in a way that where it can be ingested in a respiratory fashion. So yes, pay attention to that. So graphene oxide, used all over the place, known as toxic, discussed as toxic, and yet still want to put into an adjuvant. But worse, on top of that, even as they discuss it being a general toxicological disaster to the environment, quote, potentially, because they're using it more and more and more because of its unique structures, they will then say, and let's put it into biomedical type, applications. Let's do it in applications wherein it will enter the body purposely. And again, under the guise in any particular application is an allegedly small exposure. Well, so we find out that it's used in applications such as drug transport. Okay. So drug that is supposed to be helping you gets kind of, if you will, glued, that's not the right word, but fused or put on this razor blade for transport purposes. I don't know why. It seems to me like just an excuse, but okay, we'll put on poison in order to, we'll add a bunch of poison in order to transport drugs, but don't worry, it's just a small amount, right? And so also then it is used for cancer treatment, but you know, don't worry, that's in a worst case scenario. Someone has cancer after all, it's worth the risk of the toxicity. It can be used to transport, in fact, used in tumors because it has thermal properties where it will heat up better because it's highly thermal. It being so thin, it will heat up quicker. And I think it's probably because tumors don't like extra heat. So you can heat this stuff up from afar, not necessarily because of its magnetic properties, but it does have those. When I say magnetic properties, you will see fact check stories that say graphene oxide, you know, that's not true. It doesn't have a charge. It does have a charge. You'll specifically see journal articles talking about it being a good material for material sciences because of its unique characteristics, including its shape, its rigidity, its strength, and because of its charge capabilities, its conductivity. So it does have a charge. It is used in like cancer treatment, PTT therapy, where you put it near the tumor and you can heat it up. So yes, there is something to the allegations of it can be charged or it can carry currents. Now, how that would happen in the applications, that's of course a different question. So yes, it's all over the place. It's used in, so there's your worst news is because you're like, well, would it be put in adjuvants? It's not in adjuvants, but let's go back to some of the fact checks. You'll have fact checks that say, and you're going to need to bookmark this, that it is not an adjuvant. But then you'll find the news that says mRNA has no adjuvant. Okay. And then you'll find an Oxford professor that says, well, the adjuvant is the lipid nanoparticle. That is what encases the messenger RNA. Remember, the messenger RNA in the development thereof, the problem was getting it into the cell so the cell could then create the structure, create this spike protein. And so they'll say, there's no adjuvant. And then one Oxford professor who has to admit that her funding, it discloses that her funding comes partially from the Gates Foundation and partially from Chan Zuckerberg, which I assume is associated with Facebook Zuckerberg. So there's an adjuvant, but it's the lipids. It's like, okay, that's not what adjuvant means. What are you talking about? But it turns out it may just be what adjuvant means. So it might be a disclosure. But Pfizer, in some of the fact checks, alleged fact checks, says, hey, it is used as an adjuvant, but it is not used as an adjuvant in our vaccine. Okay, well, I just told you in 2020, they were saying it's not ready to be used as adjuvant. And yet the vaccine came out in December of 2020. So when did it start to be used as an adjuvant, this nano blade? Okay, so that's the first segment, if you will, of bad news getting to worse news, just how bad graphene oxide is. And let me add to that, as a general characteristic, this graphene oxide can cross the blood-brain barrier because it is a nanoparticle. And I will add as speculation that where's the brain fog come from a regular virus? We'll maybe connect those dots later. If not, we'll leave it at that. I don't know if I'll remember to wrap that up with a bow later on or not. But where does the brain fog come from the virus? Now, it could be that we always have brain fog, and it's just because, COVID was just hammered over and over again, constantly, every day, all the time. We hear about some of these that we weren't particularly aware of or didn't get communicated to the collective as much, even though it is a typical or not atypical side effect of getting a virus. So now we go to, okay, graphene oxide, potential adjuvant used all over the place for industrial reasons and even in biologics, seemingly a horrific idea, but that's just what we do. We take horrific ideas that can be applied to the most profitable part of society, which is the health industry. That's one of the most profitable. And for many reasons I've told you before, the primary reason being you can have a new technology and not have to prove that it's any more effective. And then because of that policy, quote, new technologies are cheerleaded as more effective, but are not more effective. And they just constantly get introduced so that the idea is, hey, we get to ratchet up prices even more. So that's another aside. I've had episodes on that specifically. So now we'll go into the next part of my discovery and the next level of bad news. And that is, there's an article, a journal article specifically talking about autoimmunity and adjuvants, okay? Autoimmunity and adjuvants. And so they, and hopefully I'll remember to tie this together with the next part where I talk about nanoparticles as adjuvants. And that might be enough of a preview and hint that you'll make the connection yourself. So autoimmunity and adjuvants is where I went next. And it's just straight up a journal article about it that just says they are linked. And the reason that they're linked is because adjuvants include heavy metals, and autoimmunity of all types are linked to adjuvants. Now, of course, they'll say, but of course, the vaccines are still worth it. And to which I say, well, what if you could get to the same positive benefit of vaccines, without using the toxicity of the adjuvants that create autoimmunity? So very quickly, the mechanism by which this autoimmunity is created is because metals, for instance, bind very, very tightly to human cells, okay? Very, very tightly to human cells. This is in the journal articles. This isn't me guessing. And because of that, the body, therefore, cannot tell the difference between self and other, and therefore autoimmunity. So you've got a damaging aspect to now a human cell because it's tightly bound to the human cell. And therefore, the body sees a damaging aspect and also identifies the part that's self and gets it mixed up and then can attack self later because it's been bound to the harm, potentially, and I don't know exactly if this is how it works. The catalog of what is a threat can include these self, the self, because of these adjuvants being tightly bound to any number of cells. And the problem is, at least with graphene oxide, it can damage even macrophages. So do these adjuvants end up binding to any number of types of cells in your body, including immune cells? And so you could not only have the body attacking human cells, but specifically attacking some immunity cells. And then you're really in a world of hurt. So basically, it is admitted
that adjuvants create autoimmunity. It's just a matter of scale. And then they'll also say to the effect of, well, the thing about autoimmunity is that maybe the person had a sensitivity towards whatever it was to begin with. What's a real convenient way to just kind of slough off a toxin? Because after all, anybody who gets cancer was more likely, potentially more likely to get cancer, apples to apples, than somebody who didn't. Some people could be dipped in toxin. Some people, some fraction of people could be dipped in toxin and not get cancer, dip in carcinogen, rather. And others will get it much more quickly. So to just excuse the toxin as not being carcinogenic because, well, they had more of a tendency to get cancer is really not the point. So as to the autoimmunity and adjuvants, one thing they admit is that these adjuvants can cross the blood-brain barrier. And I think maybe that's where I got the clue to go look up my next subject, which ended up being nanoparticles as adjuvants. So, but before we go there, because it can cross the blood-brain barrier, then that's how you get metals, heavy metals, into the blood, into the brain that would not have made it there organically. Massive problem, massive problem. So I want to cover autoimmunity. It reminds me of when I first heard this. It's like, well, how would the body not know to not attack itself? I mean, that's a basic biological function, and the body's a miracle. And I'm going to imply here, and maybe I'll get into it later, that almost all of autoimmunity, as it becomes more and more, and for instance, even rheumatoid arthritis is an autoimmune disease. So if you go find this article on adjuvants and autoimmunity, it is a great summary of all the various aspects. So there are so many autoimmune diseases. And many of them are tied to adjuvants. And you have to wonder, how is it that the body got confused to begin with? Well, I've told you, for instance, that graphene oxide is used all over the place, and it is a nanoparticle and is used all over the place that could cross the blood-brain barrier. So in this autoimmune and adjuvants article, they do talk about how these metals bind very tightly to the cells, and that is what creates the confusion of, in the immune system of self versus other, and creates autoimmunity. Now, let's go back very quickly and think of the vaccine. Now, I'm not 100% sure on this, but I know this is at least part of how this happens. I don't remember if that's always the final product, but if you have the threat that is a heavy metal bound to a cell, the issue is you've got the damaging part that the immune system wants to take away or wants to attack attached to a human cell, and thus the confusion. And that's exactly how the adjuvant and autoimmunity characterizes the issue. That creates the confusion of self. So what about the vaccine? Well, what does a vaccine do? I mean, the lack of overall wisdom that occurs after over and over incremental acceptance, and then all we do is we just continue to study the mechanisms by which the damage occurs instead of ever saying from the beginning or later, okay, now we have too much. Okay, the exposure is too much across the entire population of this toxin, we've got to stop. It just doesn't happen. So what about the vaccine? The vaccine, the current mRNA vaccine, has the body create spike proteins. And if you look at least some of the journal articles, and this is where I go, I know I've read this, I just don't know if it's the whole story. They will say the cell that is infected by the messenger RNA, because it is infected by the vaccine, that's an infection of the cell, it produces the spike protein on that cell's surface membrane. Now, I know that this is what some of the articles say. And therefore, what do you have now? You have a foreign protein, or at least a foreign-looking protein, that is made by the human cell and is setting on the surface of a human cell. You've got the danger bound to the human cell. So what is that? Again, an absolute recipe for autoimmunity. Now, I am not absolutely sure. I don't think it's the case, but I'm not sure. The mitigating factor might be that it also tells the spike proteins to leave the cell, to just break off and off they go. And so they're on the cell membrane sometimes, but then eventually leave the cell membrane. Well, any moment that they're on the cell membrane, if it's minutes, if it's hours, if it's minutes, but it's many different cells, that is still a problem for the immune system recognizing and confusing self with other, right? If it sees these cells that are human cells that have spike proteins on them. So it's the same problem. And there's zero possibility that the vaccines don't have an auto, even the messenger RNA vaccines now. This is not considering whether or not there's nanoscale adjuvants, which I will get to, but even just the basic admission of we have the cells create a spike protein, to the extent that those spike proteins are setting on the outer membrane of the cell, then we have an autoimmune issue, the same thing as we have when the adjuvants are tightly bound to a cell. So that quick aside. And so then there we go. We have an autoimmunity is a massive problem. Well, I don't know how much they say that in that article. I'm telling you, as their adjuvants. So then the question is, well, what about this blood-brain barrier? The next question becomes nanoparticles as adjuvants. Well, you know, you hear aluminum salts. When you hear the discussion of how does mRNA work and the discussion, the briefings of adjuvants and what mRNA does and how big of an effect that the adjuvants have. Well, the adjuvants end up being, you can go look up nanoparticles as adjuvants. That's not the name of the article per se, but that's what I looked up and found some articles. And it turns out that basically all of the current adjuvants are nanoparticles. So this fills in the circle of why they bind so tightly to cells. It is a man-made disaster. But it's worse than that because it's not just adjuvants. So this idea of, well, cells bind, metals bind tightly to cells is really because they're nanoparticles. But wait for it, nanoparticles as adjuvants, they specifically are using them and then engineering them further to help the virus or the virus subunit that is used as the vaccine be seen better by the body. So they're constantly shaving. I'm literally nano-engineered particles, I believe is a phrase, but nano-engineered is certainly a phrase. They literally nano-engineer the surface properties of these various nanoparticles so that the body sees them less. And what this does then, or I should say can deal with them less, it's not that it sees them less, it's that it deals, the body can deal with them less effectively. So if you go look up nanoparticles and adjuvants, that's what you find. That even the aluminum salts, that's a plain English, we're like, oh, okay, well, aluminum salts, that's one thing, but graphene oxide, quite another. Nope, just different in specificity. We are already using nanoparticles on a regular basis and adjuvants. Basically, all of them are nanoparticles, which makes you then wonder, why do you need nanoparticles? I thought you just had some aluminum in there to kind of get the body to understand that there's some toxicity here and to go attack here. As I've said as an analogy, previous
understandings or lesser understandings of what purpose the adjuvant serves is more like, hey, you know, if someone's just kind of starting a little, you know, leaf fire on the corner or burning a flag, you think one thing. But if all of a sudden there's a whole group of people there, then you understand your emergency services understands, okay, we really got to get over there. Right. And so you're trying to get your emergency services, your immune system to really understand that and then go take a catalog of what's going on. Because if it's not a big enough deal, maybe that cataloging won't understand it. And later you're not ready for that threat. Your emergency services are. So one thinks that the adjuvant is more like, hey, let's just make this more of a signal to the body to come look at this. And once it comes and looks at this, it will see the virus particles and catalog it. But it's more than just a generic, you know, let's make a 2-alarm fire instead of a 1, or instead of just something where the police officer has to go and stamp it out. It's more integral to the whole process. It seems as though the adjuvants are really, really necessary in very particular ways in order for the vaccines to work in their basic and primary way, because you'll hear them talking about nano engineering, even existing nanoparticles more and more and more. And this is among the regular nanoparticle adjuvants, which this is bad, right? Because now we've gone from graphene oxide, this is bad, all the various things. No, this seems to be a matter of course for adjuvants. They use nanoparticles. That is why these metals bind more closely to cells, which is why you get autoimmune issues. It's not a matter of aluminum generally binds to cells, organic form aluminum. It's because they have processed these things to be in nano form, and then on top of that, engineered them further for surface properties that are more flat or whatever it might be. So this is a regular course of business to take a nanoparticle and, due to the alleged motivation of making a, quote, vaccine more effective, they are purposely making the nanoparticles harder for the body to deal with. And the nanoparticles are highly toxic. The adjuvants are highly toxic. So summarizing then, you know, they justify making these nanoparticle adjuvants, allowing them to be, and then engineering them further and ignoring the toxic effects, even though you'll have other studies that go, yeah, so these are really toxic. FYI, these are the ways by which they're toxic. See all the minutiae they get into, and no one ever ends up asking, because they always put it in, or they tend to put it, they hide it in layman science behind terms like aluminum salts. And then when you get into the journal articles, they hide it in journal lingo that's hard to uncover. So you have aluminum salts and potentially graphene oxide. And, you know, Pfizer says graphene oxide is used in some, just not ours, as these major problems that will and do contribute to autoimmune disorders, where the body does not recognize self versus other because other has bound too tightly with self. But worse than adjuvants, guys, this is the next bad piece of news. The next bad piece of news is that in the discussion on adjuvants and the nanoparticle materials, they admit openly, just like graphene oxide is used all over the place for drug carrier type stuff and other applications, that other nanoparticles are used all over biologicals in medicine. And so it's not just that you're getting the exposure to these autoimmunity creating materials that wouldn't even ever naturally exist except for humans being stupid and not looking in an integrative fashion, but you're getting them in any number of medicine, any number of as you think you're going to get help. So in other words, if a study, population study was done, it is guaranteed. I'm sure a study is out there because they can study all they want, but nobody ever tells them to stop it. That someone who gets a bunch of vaccines, or I should say, if you looked at this study, someone who gets it, it's probably in the flu vaccine. I don't know, but I would presume. So let's say someone who gets vaccines as much as they possibly can versus people who don't, the former are more likely to have autoimmune. Just period. That will be what a study says if a study has been done. Secondly, then, if you are just one of those people who are partake regularly of at least prescription medication, I just told you that they admitted nanoparticles are used all over medicine, let alone hopefully not over the counter, but certainly in prescription medication. If you're a regular user and you take that population and compare it to people who stay away from it as much as they can, it's guaranteed that those who take regular medication, those who imbibe with regular pharmaceutical solutions, are going to have autoimmune disorders at a greater rate. Plainly and simply, they admit that these nano-engineered materials that are continually optimized more and more for your body to be able to deal with them worse, and they take that as a positive because that means vaccine and immune response goes up more. These things are worse and worse potential causes of autoimmunity. And they're all able to go past the blood-brain barrier because of their nano size. So that's the end of that step. We're going to go to one other step. So first of all, let me conclude that one with, this is really, 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 really bad news. I skimmed hundreds of articles, you know, for potential relevance, and then read dozens to hundreds of other abstracts, and certainly went into the details of some key articles or reviews to understand this stuff. And I'm telling you, it's bad news. You think about what I just said. We have a medical industry that has and will continue to rationalize creating more and more toxic substances that are entirely inorganic that the body cannot deal with. And to the extent it even tries, they're trying to engineer it so that it can deal with it even less. And the rationale instead of the big picture is that all of that is a good thing, even as it increases toxicity specifically and increases autoimmunity, we will continue to get more and more things like Alzheimer's because of the blood-brain barrier cross. But it's not just that we will because of the general aluminum consumption in society. That's not it. It's that we will because humans have decided to engineer and continue to decide to engineer nanoparticles that the body can't deal with. Graphene oxide, aluminum, and the others. So that's really, really horrific news. I mean, unfortunately, you can go through the logic strings all you want, but that's the conclusion you have to come to. We don't look at the big picture. Once we allow a toxin and have a certain justification in, we continue to have the justification, even as other journal articles say, yeah, so we all know it's very, very toxic, and then they'll delve into how and why. But never does the public policy discussion come up of, okay, we let this start, but now it's too much, and we now have to control it or stop it. We let graphene oxide start because it seemed to have industrial applications, but before we knew it, due to the profit margin, people are trying to understand. I'm going to say again, I've said this before, this is just like petroleum products. When someone has access to petroleum products, and that is their resource, they try to find more applications. And that's how we got plastic bowls and cups. It's how we got, what is the term for the ones that PFTE or PTFE, and then the ones that are not BPA. As a kid, I knew, wait, we're using a microwave on something that's created from oil? Well, that can't be good. We're going to be drinking oil, in essence. That can't be good. And that turned out to be true. But the reasoning is they rationalized, no, it's safe enough. And besides, it's a good idea, right? It's so moldable. And before you know it, petroleum-based products that are food containers are all over the place. And clearly, some of the stuff is going to slough off. And it's just a question of how bad is the effect going to be? So once the foot comes in through the door, you're only going to get more and more applications. Okay, so now we're going to round back to, I think, what is probably my last topic. This is going to close the circle with graphene oxide and adjuvants. And this one's big, but I also think it's practically implied. It's really bad, guys. It's just so bad. So as you look into this stuff, you find out that nanoparticles. And now we know adjuvants, because all adjuvants are nanoparticles. So you can exchange those terms back and forth. They're interchangeable. That any nanoparticle, when put into blood serum, creates a corona of the blood automatically responds to the nanoparticle with a lipid corona. Okay, you're going to have to follow me on this. It does get a little speculative, but I really think that it's just thought processes that help lead us to what the hell they're saying when they use coded language all the time. Nanoparticles inside lipids, inside the blood serum, create a lipid layer. The body automatically attaches a lipid layer. Now, you can find this. This is huge. You can find this in the graphene oxide literature. But then it turns out that it applies to other adjuvants, because other adjuvants are nanoparticles. And that's where I say I kind of came full circle on this whole thing. Inside the graphene oxide literature, as they're discussing whether or not it can be an adjuvant, which you and I would think, why would you make the nanoblade an adjuvant? Well, because it's more toxic. Well, maybe you should rework your vaccine so that they work without having to use nanoblades that can cross the blood-brain barrier. You know, maybe you should reconsider. And then you have to go, well, was the first vaccine like the simplest processed nanoparticle as an adjuvant? I honestly don't know. I don't know when it started. So you get a nanoparticle slash adjuvant, because you can exchange it here, because adjuvants are all nanoparticles. All existing adjuvants are nanoparticles. And if you put it in blood, the blood does try to react to it. It puts a lipid corona around it. Or less specifically, you can just say it covers it with lipid. But it looks like, wait for it, a lot like a spike protein. And guess what nanomaterials are on the scale of? Viruses. So if you put a spherical, or maybe some other, I don't know if it would, you know, match the surface that much if it wasn't spherical. Maybe it would still end up being a sphere. But certainly if you put a spherical nanoparticle inside blood serum, guess what you get? You get something that looks like and is on the scale of. Now, I haven't gone into the specifics of what the spike protein looks like, so that does leave something as to whether, you know, you might have implied, holy crap, does that mean it's a virus itself? Not impossible to the point that I've concluded thus far, but I haven't gone into whether, for instance, the profile of the spike proteins are consistent with the corona. If you put the nanoparticle coronified, they'll even say coronated with biological serum and lipids. If you put that picture next to your classic picture of the virus, you'd say, oh, yeah, it's the same thing, until you knew it supposedly wasn't. So we don't need to go to whether or not it's the virus itself yet.
but it is interesting, right? But let's go instead to the vaccine. So they will admit this much. We can use, if we put graphene oxide into blood serum, then it gets the corona. Okay, so that's a natural reaction inside blood serum. And then you'll find other articles that say, in order for, I'm not kidding you, this is crazy. In order for graphene oxide to be more able to survive in blood serum, we could mess with the corona and pre-coat it. Okay. And the reasoning to pre-coat it is to try to coat it with something that makes the body deal with it less effectively. Yes, I did just tell you right. Because once you say, no, we want the toxin to be created, dealt with by the body less effectively, then you get to how do we make the body deal with it less effectively? Well, if you put it in serum, you get a biological corona around it automatically. So this might be one of the body's defense mechanisms. We don't want this raw thing floating around. And for all we know, the immune system does a thing like tagging a cell or tagging material for waste, you know, to target as waste so that another thing like a macrophage can come along and swallow it and take it away. So the biocorona might have that function. This is bad. Just surround it for now. And maybe the biocorona itself tags it, or maybe the biocorona is an exception to the rule so that the tag later comes and says, oh yeah, anything that's foreign for sure, but then also anything with this biocorona. So it's unbelievable, guys. It truly, truly is unbelievable. They say, you know what we could do? Now that's automatically going to be biologically chlorinated when it comes into blood. But what if we pre-treat it with blood outside of the body? And therefore, it already has a corona on it. Then if it goes into the body, maybe it won't chlorinate separately or the body won't react with it. Okay, sure. But then they go further than that. Yeah, maybe that's true. They go, what if we also put it in blood serum so that it will be chlorinated? It will get the biological coronation around it. But we put it in weaker blood serum. For instance, take away, I believe it's called IgG, I forget, immunoglobulin something. Then we find out that it survives better. So they specifically put it in weaker blood serum so that it gets a pre-coating of biological corona. So how the body would respond is not the way the body is able to respond, because it's already been chlorinated, but in a weaker fashion, as though your blood doesn't have everything it has in it. So that is some of what is done. Now let's try to connect it. This is the type of rationale they'll take. This is a nanoparticle poison. Why are you trying to protect it so much? Well, and do we just think it's, well, because of the separate aspect? Where we just want a general toxin to kind of, you know, make it a 3-alarm fire instead of 1-alarm fire? Or is it integral to the virus subunit even being recognized? So this is where I'm going to bring in what I think is maybe just hidden material, hidden knowledge. So we know that they use nanoparticles as drug carriers. They've admitted as much. They've admitted not just graphene oxide as a potential drug carrier, but other adjuvants used as drug carriers, as scaffolding, if you will. So, did you ever think about where they get the idea that they have a nanolipid? So they say that the messenger RNA is encapsulated in a nanolipid. Where the hell do you get a nanolipid? What are you talking about? Now, maybe lipids can be on that scale, but isn't it also possible, and they say, oh, we encase the messenger RNA in a nanolipid, that they're really talking about a corona that gets formed. And you go, well, are they really saying that they're calling it a nanolipid because once it gets into the body, it becomes nanolipid encased? No, they don't have to. I just explained to you that they already discuss that if you pre-coat it using serum outside the body, you now have a lipid encasement. So while this has always been characterized in graphs or maybe just in our imagination, I forget how many graphs we've seen, that the encasement is just a sphere that the messenger RNA is protected by. Is it not possible that, given all I've told you, that the lipid encasement is really just the biological corona that is around the nanomaterial because they've pre-treated it in external blood? And so that's why it's, quote, encased, the messenger RNA. So that's one potential dot connection. The other potential dot connection is them openly saying it's a carrier. So what I'm implying there then is it not a biocorona because the body, or rather because the external blood serum is dealing with a nanomaterial, in which case it's not as though you have some part of the vaccine being, okay, first you put in the messenger RNA or the regular vaccine, and then also you put in, you know, some part of the solution, then 40%, 50%, whatever, is this adjuvant. No, it is possible they're just tied together. They're integral. And they're always together. So it is possible, not just for the graphene oxide, but that for all the vaccines, that the vehicle by which there's any effectiveness of the subunit of the virus particle itself, so that it doesn't get broken up almost immediately, is because it is attached and or protected by the nanomaterial. Listen, all the adjuvants, they admit, are used as drug carriers. Graphene oxide. The plan is, I forget if they said they've used it yet. I don't think they have. They could use it as a drug carrier, scaffolding. So if the subunit of the virus, or if the mRNA instructions, which really, you know, isn't a virus, an RNA, it's not DNA, I don't think. So how much different is it? It's RNA instructions, which are in the form of RNA. Oh my gosh. So is it possible that the nanomaterials are what kind of protects and allows the virus bits or the virus whole? I think maybe back in classic viruses, it was just the entire attenuated, but now we get to the subunit and we admit in the messenger RNA that we get a phospholipid surrounding it. We just call it a lipid nanoparticle. So it seems as though it's possible that graphene oxide or other adjuvants are just simply not called adjuvants anymore in messenger RNA. And that is what the RNA instructions are attached to. It is protected because they've pre-treated the lipid surroundings with weak blood serum, so that the body is less likely to put the proper markers and other things on it. And then they admit that it survives the body easier. So I think I've come up with everything I wanted to. I know this is a long one, but the connections were made fairly quickly compared to me reading a bunch of articles. Let me think if there's anything else I want to mention here. Well, I'll highlight that then if basically adjuvants are a necessary part of each messenger RNA delivered, then that's how you could get to 99% of the vaccine is graphene oxide by spectroscopy, because you have to have a unit of graphene oxide per unit of RNA instructions delivered. And by volume, by mass, however spectroscopy sees it, it could be 99% of the situation. But the bad thing is, it's like how, and this becomes the question,
you'll read some journal articles, and this is where there's definitely a little bit of speculation on my part, even though otherwise this makes a lot of sense and seems to integrate a lot of information that, oh, well, no, what happens is that the nanolipid allows the instructions to attach to cells, or is it that the nanomaterial allows it to breach the cell? But again, the corona is around it. So does that mean it's less sharp? But they'll say, and then the mRNA gets delivered on, I don't know, if you will, a waffle, a plate of some kind, of some material that then once inside the cell, it dissolves. And therefore the mRNA, the coding, the instructions are left on their own, and then the body reads them outside of the nucleus. So there is that. But it seems possible that adjuvants that are straight up toxin are not just potentially like graphene oxide. It's just that graphene oxide might be the worst, being the nanoblade. All of them are toxic. All of them have been engineered to be more toxic, and it's been justified.
I guess I'll summarize where we've gone. Graphene oxide first. The idea that it's a nanoblade, that it is used in a lot of places, even as it's considered to be a potential adjuvant as of mid-2020. It's already being used, at least potentially, for a drug carrier. And then also that it's used in many industries, so much so that it's considered potentially a very bad toxin to the environment. It's in powder form. Studies around the toxicity, for instance, on fish and other things.
That this is a general toxin of high incidence in the environment, that it hurts fish, among others, that it's a problem, that it's in powder form. Also, then we talked about the idea that graphene oxide hurts immune systems. We went to from there to the more generic adjuvants and found out that adjuvants are a known cause of autoimmune disorders. From there, we went to the idea that adjuvants generally are nanoparticles. Before that, we said adjuvants are a known cause of autoimmune disorders. And the admission is that one of the reasons is that the metals bind tightly to human cells, and so the body can't tell self from other. Then we go to adjuvants as nanoparticles and find out basically all the adjuvants are nanoparticles, and that would explain specifically, as opposed to the organic forms of the metals, why they bind so tightly and why the body can't deal with them as well, and why they can cross the blood-brain barrier. And as a result then of all adjuvants being nanoparticles, we understand that the threat is even worse as far as potential toxicity, potential things like Alzheimer's and, you know, poisoning, because of these various characteristics as they continue to engineer them to be more persistent and for the body to be less and less able to deal with them. We understand then that the threat is worse and worse. And then on top of that, we understood that, hey, it's not that they're just using adjuvants, just as graphene oxide, a seemingly horrific idea to be used anywhere in biologics, is used in biologics anyway. The rationale has been for many of these same nanoparticle adjuvant materials to be used in all kinds of biologics. So we have that aspect of seemingly there's an autoimmune threat behind every medicine and pharmaceutical corner. Now, I have not delved into exactly where all those exist. I can just tell you that the admission is that nanoparticles are used all over medicine. And then from there, we went to the idea that, if our adjuvants are more integrated part of vaccines than we otherwise have been led to believe or easily understand, is it not that when you're putting in your vaccine, you pour in the virus particle or virus subunits that you want the body to recognize, and then B, you put pour in the adjuvants as a separate deal so that it becomes a 3-alarm fire instead of a 1-alarm fire. And so your emergency response teams and different departments know to go look at it and then pay attention to it so that they're ready later on. Is it instead that the adjuvants are an integral part of the virus particles even being recognized by the body? And I'll say specifically for maybe the subunits where you can say it's not even the whole virus, you know, live, attenuated, or dead. And so when it's the subunits, the body's basic response is even lower. And so is it possible then that the poisonous aspect is an integrated part of the vaccine, not just a separate ingredient? And then we go to the idea that why are the messenger RNA vaccines, they don't have an adjuvant listed, and they admit that they don't need an adjuvant. And yet we have an Oxford doctor or professor admitting, or at least saying, hey, it's the lipid encasement is the adjuvant. Is that kind of a way of, you know, saying that, well, really it's it's the underlying nanoparticle? And then we get to the idea potentially, because a lot of this makes a lot of sense, that is it that the vaccines are, because they're integrally including adjuvants, if they are, then is it that they're very much a bunch of adjuvants? And because they're a bunch of adjuvants that are nanoparticles, particularly with the COVID vaccine and more generally, is it that the nanoparticle aspect are always the basic and integrated part of the structure of the active part of the vaccine, not just the supplementary part? And then they get a phospholipid, you know, encasement around them. So in essence, vaccines are always delivering some decent numbers, a 1-for-1 ratio of virus subunits or, you know, the particles you're trying to deliver the mRNA instructions to the material that is the nanoparticle that shoves the body to create more of an immune reaction, quote unquote. So a lot of stuff to think through. It's bad news. In a way, I feel bad about delivering it. And the last little bit, certainly a speculation, but there's no lack of speculation, or rather there's no speculation, that it seems as though autoimmune is created by medicine under the excuse of helping people, and then just putting one logic string into a silo and forgetting about it. Because after all, we've already asked and answered. Of course it's worth it. But yet, after you ask and answer and of course it's worth it, then under that, you act as though more toxicity, less of an ability of the body to deal with the same toxin becomes the goal instead of a potential further problem. Okay, guys, thanks for listening. I appreciate it. Spread the word. I know that's a lot of information, a lot of integration. But, you know, even if you're not ready to spread the word per se outside, you got to listen to this or something like that. Keep all those things in mind as you do your own research. And I will potentially have supplementary episodes up. It's been exhausting to go through those journal articles, and I've read those articles, and it's like, then I read more, and I've kind of made little episodes in between and then not seen the big picture. And then I continue, and there's more of a big picture, and so on and so on. So I think I've finally gotten to the last part of the big picture outside of the last speculations of, well, do we have some proof that the way they talk, it really does seem that every single vaccine is characterized as it's got a nice lipid structure around it. Because remember, the difference here is, well, one's messenger RNA that goes in and tells the body to create the spike protein. And the other is, no, it's just a virus subunit. And so the body sees the virus subunit. So interesting for sure, but still some speculation at the end. But definite information on autoimmunity and the prevalence of massively toxic materials being built into vaccines purposely, and then also the separate idea of that apparently medicine sees as the big picture that they must ignore a big part of the big picture, the toxicity of materials that they're engineering. And because they're engineering them further and further and refining them, ignore the increasing toxicity. All right, guys, thanks.